Hello and welcome to Literary Loitering. We are the show that talks about all things related to books and arts here on the Geek Show Podcast Network. I'm Andrew and I am, of course, joined by Rob.
Hello.
So we have got quite a few things to talk about today. First of all, we've got the sad news that while we've been on our little break, both Happily and Umberto Eco have sadly passed away.
We've lost so many people at the beginning of the year. It's
ridiculous. It's been an absolute bloodbath 2016.
It's ridiculous. I mean, Lemmy, David Bowie, Harper Lee, Umberto Eco was an amazing author. I know that he's not a big name here in the UK and over in America, but if you get a chance to read some of his stuff, then read it. He was such a good author, such a good writer. My favourite book of his is Fuck All Spendulum, but Bardolino was really good, and it's all about lying and the consequences of lying, effectively, but set in kind of medieval Europe-type place.
So medieval Europe, because that is the most medieval Europe type place there is.
Yeah, I know. Words are hard.
I know, I probably shouldn't make fun of you since before the show I've been sitting here for God knows how long trying to pronounce the word entrepreneur.
Yeah, this is true. Anyway, yeah.
Literally, I only said that just so I could make sure that I still know how to actually pronounce it now.
It's sad that they passed away, but I really don't know how to comment on a story like this. You know, when someone passes away, all you can do is empathize and sympathize with the people that they left behind. But when it's time, that's it.
Oh, yeah. Well, I know Harper Lee said she was, about 90 years old?
I think Umberto Eco was around that age as well. Was he 84, something like that?
Yes, I believe he was.
Yeah, 84.
Yeah, 84.
You know how everyone was saying Harper Lee was a recluse?
Yeah.
That's just the press saying that she was a recluse.
Yeah, no, there's a difference between recluse and doesn't want to shove their faces into the press all the time.
Yeah, I mean, she had an active social life, hung out with her friends in her hometown loads and loads of times. You know, everybody in the community knew her. Everybody respected her privacy. It's just because she didn't play nice with the press. All of a sudden, she got called a recluse. And you're like, well, no, she wasn't.
She just won't throw you your bones that you want.
Yeah.
You filthy animals in the press.
You mean like us?
Yes, like us.
Yeah. Happily was 89.
Oh, is it?
Anyway, we are sad that they've gone and that we won't read any more fantastic works from them. But they are the kind of authors who in 15, 20, 30, 40 years' time, people will come back to these authors and do these re-examinations of their lives and try to work out what inspired them when, you know, we have had the opportunity to simply ask them, you know?
It's strange to think about things like that.
The reason why I'm thinking about things like that is the next news story. It's ironic that we're talking about looking back on an author's life and trying to figure out what inspired them to do stuff, because it's emerged that the Devon town of Tiverton was a huge inspiration on J.D. Salinger when he wrote Catcher in the Rye.
Because as we learnt with Dracula, Devon is literally the cultural hub of the entire world.
Yes,
Books are based on Devon.
Well, unlike the Devon Dracula one, this one actually has a lot more substance. Back in 1944... Salinger was actually a staff sergeant and he was stationed in the Devon town of Tiverton. He spent 3 months there waiting for D-Day and he'd already planned The Catcher in the Rye to a degree. But it was after his stay in Tiverton and after the D-Day landings and him spending a year on continental Europe fighting, when he went back, he'd become a lot more sympathetic because he kind of sentimentalized Devon and that area because for him, British people at that point were a lot more matter-of-fact and direct. He was surrounded by a beautiful countryside, and the pace of life was much, much slower than New York. And so he somehow became a lot more sympathetic to his characters, especially to Holden Caulfield, which is one of the reasons that Catcher in the Rye has such a unique tone to it, which you don't really expect unless you sit down and read it, because it's useless talking about the Catcher in the Rye to people. They have to read it and make the judgment for themselves whether they like it. It's one of those books. I don't know, have you read it?
I have, and to be honest, I'm not sure if I like it or not.
See what I mean?
Yeah, it might be one of those things I have to read again.
Yeah.
I think I was a bit young when I read it the first time, so maybe
it's not
going back with older eyes might let me get a more definitive opinion on it.
Well, I kind of agree with you on that. I think that The Catcher in the Rye is not a book that you should be giving to school children. I think you need to be a little bit older, a little bit more worldly to understand it.
Yeah, basically have allowed the universe to properly suck you right in the face.
Yeah. It's like, you know, John Steinbeck of Mice and Men, yeah. The Grapes of Wrath. Those are two books that I wouldn't give to a kid to read. If they were 17, 18 years old, then I'd give them those books to read, but I wouldn't give it to a 13-year-old kid.
Yeah, well, I think at the moment it's kind of like 15, 16, 17-year-olds were getting it.
Mm.
But yeah, I can see how at that age you're just not really mentally ready for something like that.
But something like To Kill a Mockingbird, because it's told from the perspective of children, that's fairly easy to get into. Okay, the themes it deals with are mature, but it's told through the eyes of children, and that way it becomes relatable.
Yeah, plus I think it's the kind of thing that thematically you can get to grips with fairly early age.
Yeah.
You don't need that much like real world experience to understand, oh yeah, racism is kind of bad.
Yep, this is true. Back to Catcher in the Rye. It's one of those books where, as I said, you either like it or you don't. Maybe read it with older eyes. The fact that Salinger had such a connection with Devon, though, I didn't know about. And it's news to me. It makes me want to go back and read The Catcher in the Rye and see if I can get those Devonian connections in the book, you know?
Just reimagine everyone with a thick Devon accent.
Maybe not that far. I mean, it's The Catcher in the Rye and not Dracula. I mean, can you imagine Dracula with a strong West Country accent?
Yes, I can. And Devonian it's great.
Accent. Yeah. I'm not even going to attempt it because if I do and Craig hears this, he'll punch me. He's banned me from making any attempts at West Country accents.
Only because they are horrible.
Yeah, my accents do not work. It happens to other people.
Yes, it does.
Anyway, shall we move on from
I
there?
I think we should.
What's next?
I think, you know, we'll save the fun thing till last.
Yes, the best for last.
Because I have got a horrible, horrible piece of awfulness that we have to shove out the way first.
That is a long-suffering sigh.
It's a long-suffering sigh because One Direction fanfiction author Anna Todd launches an app for her fans.
A what?
So, basically, this is Anna Todd.
Yeah.
Who started writing fanfiction about One Direction on the internet. And it got 50 Shades of Greyified. In that there's now, like, a legitimate series of books called the After Series about a band and their frontman, which is amazing because they've changed Harry Styles to Hardin Scott. I've seen Harry Styles. He looks like the kind of guy who is Hardin Scott. Indeed, is the correct response. But now, even better, she's got her own app on the Androids and the iOSes so that she can talk to her fans and they can help influence her work. It's okay, because it's the work of US startup Victorious. Just, my God, the stars they have worked with. YouTube sensations. Nash Greer, Lily Singh, Ryan Higer, and Boyce Avenue.
Hang on, there's someone called Boyce Avenue?
There's someone called Boyce Avenue.
Is this another middle-class rap name?
I think it is.
Sorry. Boyce Avenue. Is your real name Boyce Avenue? We do want to know. Do let us know.
And if so, are you a sentient street? Because I would actually watch those YouTube videos. But anyway, it's okay. Because Victorious does have a real actual celebrity they've worked with as well. Which I think sums this whole thing up. It's Katie Price. People who work with Katie Price are making an app so that you can read awful, awful One Direction fanfiction. Hooray!
I don't know how to respond to this.
I don't know. But this is the world we live in, Rob. This is what we have made for ourselves.
Why?
This
Why?
Is what we have
Why?
Built society into.
Why?
I don't know anymore.
My only words now are, and why? I does not compute.
Which makes sense, because this story does show like how our language and culture is basically dead.
So a One Direction fan fiction is now a series of fan fictions, and there's an app that allows you to read.
Actually, I'm not sure if you can actually read the awful fan fiction or if you can just talk about the awful fan fiction on them.
I think we need to find out more about
this. We do. Luckily, I found a couple of excerpts. Fortunately, not only are they awful, they are awful, so filthy, filthy, smutty smut.
What?
Oh, it's all naughty fun times in bed. But what I do have that's even better than any excerpt is the author's summary of the book. So, Tessa is a good girl with a sweet, reliable boyfriend back home. She's got direction, ambition, and a mother who's intent on keeping her that way. But she's barely moved into her freshman dorm when she runs into Hardin. With his tousled brown hair, cocky British accent, tattoos and lip ring, Hardin is cute and different from what she's used to. But he's also rude, to the point of cruelty even. For all his attitude, Tessa should hate him. And she does. Until she finds herself alone with him in his room. Something about his dark mood grabs her, and when they kiss, it ignites within her a passion she's never known before. And indeed why?
And indeed why?
It's so bad.
I...
Hardin's blazing eyes don't leave mine as I make my way to him. That's one of the lines.
Isn't this on the level of List of the Lost?
I know this happiness that I feel isn't going to last, and I feel like Cinderella, waiting for the clock to strike and end my blissful night.
This is List of the Lost, isn't it? You know the Morrissey one?
Yep, this is Snowball of Sexual Violence.
Of roller coasters and things like that. I'm not sure.
Breast bowel rolling over his howling mouth.
I can never go back to Alton Towers. Morrissey, you ruined Alton Towers for me.
Especially the splash at the end of the log flume.
Yes.
So I've seen that in a whole new light.
No.
I think that's why they must keep so much of it in the dark.
Oh, okay. I don't know. It's killing my brain cells. I can feel them dying.
You've been with so many girls, I blurt out, and he frowns. None like you.
Oh, God.
It's so bad.
This
is an actual book now.
Why?
I don't know. It makes me sad on every conceivable level.
I think we need to take a break and have a palate cleanser. I think we need to move on to something better.
I think we do need to move on to something... Oh, my God. We do. But after one last thing, because I've also just seen the front cover.
Okay.
And it's like, After by Anna Todd. Okay, Wattpad sensation, Imaginator 10.
Sorry, what?
I thought you got like an internet handle on the cover. Oh no. It's not Imaginator 10. It's Imaginator 1D.
After by Anna Todd. Wattpad sensation, Imaginator 1D.
Now we can move on.
I have two words for this, and why. I think I'm going to make that the episode title.
Because that's all we're capable of saying now.
Yes. I dare you to try and say entrepreneur.
Entrepreneur.
Entropy nerd.
Yeah, nailed it.
There you go. We're entropy nerds.
Nailed it like Hardin Scott in his 1D.
Oh, euphemisms. Always good. Anyway, let's move on to something that is a lovely cleanser. It will cleanse our souls and our minds, as it does every year. The Diagram Prize, the Bookseller Diagram Prize, for the oddest title.
Yes, I think this is a staple of literary lightering, but in fact, this is my first year covering it.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
And we have got some exciting contenders.
Oh, yeah.
Because we have got, for this year's oddest book title, Reading from Behind, A Cultural History of the Anus.
Yes. I don't understand how or why, but yes. What else is on the...
We've got what is rapidly becoming my favourite, just for its pure simplicity, Soviet Bus Stops.
Yes, I think that's a great title. It just conjures up all of these Cold War ideas of there's a bus stop in the middle of nowhere.
Yes, made entirely out of, like, grey slabs.
Yeah, it's all grey.
And a single frowning man in a trench coat and fedora.
Yep.
I love it. Then we have Too Naked for the Nazis.
What's this one about?
And
why would the Nazis care?
It's like it's something to do with like how the Nazis banned strip shows.
I've seen war movies. They didn't. They said they did, but they didn't.
No, they did not.
No, they didn't. Anyway, the one that I had difficulty with.
Oh boy, the book title.
Yeah. Reading the Liver, Papyrological Texts on Ancient Greek Extra Spicy.
Yes, it's extra spicy. That's what's reading the liver.
I think it's extispicy. Extispicy, yeah.
Extispicy.
Yeah, extra spicy. That's what it will be known as. It's like entropy nerds.
Yes, it's like entropy nerds.
So, yes, ancient Greek extra spicy. That's what it is. And I don't know how you read a liver.
Well, clearly we're going to have to buy this book and find out.
Is the liver extra spicy? I don't understand.
Oh, that's cannibal.
Does it come with onions? Or fava beans?
And a nice Chianti.
Oh.
We have a couple of other book titles, which these are the ones that I'm not so keen on. We've got Paper Folding with Children, which is okay, yes.
I think if that one was just called Folding with Children, that one would work.
Yes, that would work
so
as a weird
better.
Book title.
Yes.
Then Behind the Binoculars, Interviews with Acclaimed Bird Watchers.
That one's not odd.
Yeah,
at all.
That just seems like it's been all, bird watchers are weird, which.
See, if they'd said Interviews with Acclaimed Voyeurs, then.
Yes. But then we have what I'm fairly certain is going to be the winner. Transvestite Vampire Biker Nuns from Outer Space. A consideration of cult film.
Yeah, I reckon that one's going to win. But Reading from Behind, A Cultural History of the Anus is a close
That is like the biggest competition.
And then I think the one that after that I would put as third place would be Reading the Liver. I think Too Naked for the Nazis it's too pat a title. Reading the Liver has that extra spicy element to
yes,
it.
Yes, has that extra kick.
Yes. But, thankfully, they do keep a track of all of the winners, because the Diagram Prize has been going since 1978.
Which is a long while.
I know, but it just goes to tell you just how many people come up with really odd titles. So, I think this is becoming a tradition as well. Would you like to go through this list with me?
Oh, I think we should.
Right. Let's give people a reminder of what's been, what has actually won. So back in 1978, the Proceedings of the Second International Workshop on Nude Mice from University of Tokyo Press.
Then in 1979, we had the Madam as Entrepreneur.
Entropy Nerd, yeah.
Career Management in-House Prostitution by Transaction Press. Also, I like in the notes for the Wikipedia article, it's just about working in prostitution.
Yes.
Thanks, Wikipedia. I couldn't have worked that out.
In 1980 was The Joy of Chickens by Dennis Nolan from Prentice Hall, and it's about breeds of chickens. if you hadn't figured that out already.
This, ooh, 1981 gets a little bit dark. Last Chance at Love, Terminal Romances.
I wonder what that could Pinnacle be about. Dress. I wonder what that could be about.
Like people finding love while waiting for aeroplanes?
Possibly. So they're all Tom Hanks then?
Yes, yes. They are. Everyone is Tom Hanks.
So 1982, population and other problems. Family planning, housing 1,000 million, labour employment. By various authors from China National Publications about the demographics of the People's Republic of China.
Then, in 1983, we had Unsolved Problems of Modern Theory of Lengthwise Rolling, which is by a bunch of people from Mer Publishers, and it's about rolling as a metalworking technique.
See, if you don't have that little note there that explains what the book's about, you just think, hang on, so is it like when I lie down on the floor and I roll?
Yes, but by the world's greatest philosophers, Limp Bizkit.
Yep. 1984. The Book of Marmalade, its antecedents, its history, and its role in the world today, by Anne Wilson from Constable Publishers. And it's, well, it's exactly what you think. It's about the history of marmalade.
Oh, 1985 is a corker. But I want to point out that this is by Donald L. Wilson,
yeah,
which you will notice is a man's name.
Yes.
Who wrote Natural Bust Enlargement with Total Power. How to increase the other 90% of your mind to increase the size of your breasts. And why?
And in case people were wondering, what does it say in the notes?
About bust enlargement through positive thinking.
Is this one of those, I think, therefore I am?
Yeah. I think, therefore, I am double D.
Yeah, I know, I think I have large breasts, therefore they are. In 1986.
Oh, no. I don't think we could even say that on the show.
Oral Sadism and the Vegetarian Personality by Glenn C. Erlenbogen, which is a humorous and parody articles about psychiatry.
Oh, dear. So, skip 1987 because there was an award then. 1988 had Versailles, The View from Sweden.
There's a few bits in between before you can see Versailles.
And I guess just to kind of look around them.
Yes. 1989. How to Poo in the Woods. That's not the word they've used.
No, that is not the word they've used.
How to Poo in the Woods, An Environmentally Sound Approach to a Lost Art by Kathleen Meyer from 10 Speed Press. And it's about the responsible treatment of one's human waste in wilderness areas. You could have just called it Poop and Scoop.
No, no, you couldn't have. Oh, no. I have the 1991, don't I?
Yes.
I have the Lesbian Sadomasochism Safety Manual, which is exactly what it says on the tin.
1991 didn't get an award either, but 1992 was amazing. How to Avoid Huge Ships by John W. Trimmer.
Which is certainly a problem I always have. Yeah,
by John W. Trimmer. And it's advice to pleasure boat sailors on the dangers of shipping lanes. And I have to wonder about this because I have seen huge ships up close. I have seen them in the distance. If you go to any seaside in the UK, you'll probably see the tankers in the distance. Those are what classify as huge ships.
Yes, and I feel like their two defining characteristics is that they are both A, large and therefore incredibly visible, and B, rather slow.
Yes.
I feel like there shouldn't be a problem here.
That's my point exactly.
Luckily, we don't have this kind of problem with 1993's winner,
yes,
American Bottom Archaeology.
I can never watch Indiana Jones again.
No, indeed, this most certainly does not belong in a museum.
Now we know what the rolling boulder was. And why the Nazis' faces melted at the end. The Ark of the Covenant, indeed.
Right, that's by James W. Potter and Charles J. Bears of the University of Illinois Press.
1994. The Highlights in the History of Concrete by C.C. Stanley. Guess what that's about?
Zits. About bottom archaeology?
No.
Lesbian sadomasochism?
No.
Vegetarianism?
No.
Well, it can't be about the history of concrete, surely.
It could be.
Wow, that was a random guess.
Yes. Anyway.
1995. Reusing old graves, a report on popular British attitudes.
I wonder what that's about. 1996. Why?
This is literally the greatest literary work I've ever seen.
Greek Rural Postmen and Their Cancellation Numbers by Derek Willen. And it's just a book about cancellation numbers in the Hellenic Post.
Why? Why again? Oh, God. It doesn't get better in 1997. So you have The Joy of Sex, Pocket Edition.
The author's name.
Oh, no! By Alex Comfort.
That's what I was laughing at.
Oh, my God. That's perfect.
1998. Developments in dairy cow breeding. New opportunities to widen the use of straw. By Gareth Williams.
That's some bad phrasing.
No.
I told them we're going to make it to the end of the list. It's going to kill us, Bob.
Oh.
Oh, it's okay. Got something nice and sensible to bring us back down from 1999. Weeds in a Changing World. British Crop Protection Council Symposium, Proceedings Number 64.
Yes.
By Charles H. Sturton.
Look in the notes. You thought we were safe.
Oh, no. No. It's alternate title.
No. That was a different title. That was the other alternative.
Which, how did that win out over male genitalia of butterflies of the Balkan Peninsula with a checklist?
I think that's the best bit, is it has a checklist. Can you imagine that? The Joy of Sex Pocket Edition with checklist.
Oh, speaking of The Joy of Sex, do you want to read out the winner for 2000?
Designing high-performance stiffened structures and without Viagra by the Institution of Mechanical Engineers, and it's about
stiffness in engineering.
Oh, you can do the next one.
Okay, 2001, Butterworth's Corporate Manslaughter Service.
Is this the next big read after Slaughterhouse-Five?
Yeah.
2002, Living with Crazy Buttocks by Kaz Cook, and its humorous essays on contemporary culture, including female body image and other topics.
2003, The Big Book of Lesbian Horse Stories.
Yes.
Which is just 8 stories in a pastiche of time novel styles from different decades, each involving lesbian romance and horses.
Horses are again the theme in 2004, with Bombproof Your Horse by Rick Pelicano and Lauren Chardon, The full title is Bombproof Your Horse, Teach Your Horse to Be Confident, Obedient and Safe No Matter What You Encounter.
Oh, wow. 2005. People Who Don't Know They're Dead. how they attach themselves to unsuspecting bystanders, and what to do about it.
Sorry, what?
It's a book about dead spirits that took up residence in bodies that do not belong to them.
So it's a book about exorcism?
Apparently so.
Is this like the exorcism self-help book? If you find yourself with a dead spirit in your body, then throw salt at yourself.
Can you imagine if just you're out and about for a walk, you get possessed by a spirit? Oh, well, thank goodness I've got my handy exorcism self-help book with me. But it's actually just the Joy of Sex Pocket Edition.
Yes. And the spirit is happy. Moving on to 2006. The Stray Shopping Carts of Eastern North America, A Guide to Field Identification by Julian Montague. And...
But what about West America? What if they have abandoned shopping carts?
All I could say is that why do you need a guide to field identification? Because don't they usually, where the handle is, have the name of the shop they've come from?
You would think so. So more importantly, does it have a checklist?
No.
Boo. Boo indeed. Okay, moving on to 2007. If you want closure in your relationship, start with your legs. By Big Boom.
The notes are great.
It's a self-help book written by a man for the benefit of women.
2008. The 2009 to 2014 World Outlook for 60 milligram containers of fromage frais by Philip M. Parker.
Ooh, I'm excited now.
Don't know why.
But it's got computer-generated combinations of boilerplate text and public domain data related to fromage frais. How is that not the most exciting thing you've ever heard? Almost as exciting as 2009's Crocheting Adventures in Hyperbolic Planes.
Sorry, what? Oh,
Crocheting Adventures with Hyperbolic Planes.
Sorry, what?
It's a mathematical book featuring crocheted hyperbolic planes.
Are we talking about crochet as in knitting?
That's what I'm going to assume.
How do you knit a hyperbolic plane?
With lots of patience.
And a certain degree of mathematical genius.
Well, that's why it's a maths textbook.
2010. Managing a Dental Practice. The Genghis Khan Way. Thousands of huge men on tiny horses. And this is a how-to guide on managing a dental practice by Michael R. Young.
What can you even say about that?
I don't know.
So in 2011, we got a lovely Thai cookbook.
Yes.
By Sayud Dewong.
Yep.
Cooking with Poo.
Gonna clarify this one. I actually had a look at this. And Poo is actually, because we say Poo and we mean Poo.
Yes.
But it's one of those Winnie the Pooh things. Winnie the Pooh is not talking about Poo as in feces. And in this case, Poo is basically a person.
Yeah, that's what I assumed.
Yeah. But it doesn't work.
No, it does not.
2012 is one that we, I think, have on the shelf here. Goblin Proofing One's Chicken Coop by Bakely Reginald, and it's a guide to banishing fairies from your home. Not quite Wikipedia. This is one man's quest to exterminate the fairy menace.
And stop it from stealing his chickens.
Basically.
Well, then 2013 was another one that I think we have. How to Poo on a Date.
Yep.
By Mats and Enzo. And it's The Lover's Guide to Toilet Etiquette. Etiquette. Words are gone. They're gone again. Entropy nerds are back.
And 2014. And I feel awful saying this one.
Oh, this is a bad one.
This is a bad one. This is by Margaret Mepschult. And it's a self-published travel log called Strangers Have the Best Candy.
Oh, dear me, no.
Let me just repeat that. According to this self-published travel log by Margaret Meps Schuld, I just want to make sure that you understand it's by Margaret Meps Schuld, nothing to do with us.
We're going to distance ourselves from this very far.
Yes. According to this book, the title of this book is Strangers Have the Best Candy. I just want to let that sink in for a second. With all the things that are wrong with that title.
Is it the everything?
Yes. It is the everything. You name that tune in one.
Hooray, baby.
And to that glorious list, there will soon be another edition.
Yes, yes, there will. And I cannot wait to find out what it is.
I am curious as to what is going to win.
So, shall we take a little break?
Yes.
I think we need to calm ourselves back down.
I think we need to regain some brain cells. They're running around here somewhere. And I just want to make one final thing before we go for a break. I've just been on the BBC article for the Diagram Prize. I'm just in the column on the right-hand side. They've got a featured article on BBC. This is BBC News, bbc.co.uk. Their featured article at the top of their features is about China's high-speed sexual revolution. And they titled it Abusing the Dragon.
Oh, no.
Oh. Why isn't that on the list? And on that note, we're going to take a break.
Yeah.
Hello, do you like films? Well, wow, that's good. We're over the first hurdle. If you like films and you also like podcasts, you should probably check out the Geek Show's only dedicated movie podcast, Cinema Eclectica. Well staffed with a trained array of helper monkeys, we review all of the latest films every week and do it reasonably well.
Welcome back to Literary Loitering. Now we've got ourselves a little book review.
Yes, and this is book two of The Chronicles of the Exile by Mark Turner. This is Dragon Hunters. Now, before you go Googling Dragon Hunters on the internet, trust me, don't, because Dragon Hunters is a fairly common title. Thankfully,
especially don't go searching the Chinese internet.
Yes, you don't want the abuse. Thankfully, Mark Turner is not a fairly common author. He's put a lot of thought into this. Right. When we left the previous book, When the Heavens Fall, things were happening. All sorts of stuff was happening. Betrayals were happening. All sorts of things were going wrong. And there was the Stoneskins appearing and the book that was stolen from the Mage's Guild, which actually belonged to the Lord of the Dead type person, and the spider was involved. And now another god has got involved called the Chameleon, where the spider deals in knowledge, knowledge equaling power. The Chameleon is all about power, military power, might, strength, that sort of thing. It starts off with Saren Sol, who has been sitting in a cell for about a year. Now, Saren Sol is a guardian who was sent through one of these transport gates, these magical gates, and ended up in a place that he didn't recognize. He thinks, after much working out and a year of thinking, that he's somewhere in the Storm Isles, but he can't be certain. And if he is, then, you know, he's in trouble because the Storm Isles are ruled by the Storm Lords, who are a group of really powerful water mages. So, he meets the head of the Storm Lords, Imel, and they basically come to an agreement. There's something that she wants to do. She wants to secure her hold over the Council of the Storm Lords. She doesn't want to step down. She wants to maintain her power. And in order to do that, she needs to do something drastic that will force everyone to her side. Now, the Storm Isles and the Storm Lords have a tradition. Once a year, they have this thing called the Dragon Day. And the Dragon Day is basically, they will open the Dragon Gate and allow one sea dragon to pass through into the Sabian Sea. That sea dragon is then hunted by the Storm Lords, and the dragon blood is used and various things like that. The dragon is used for parts, basically, but it's hunted by the Storm Lords. The sea dragons, the reason why they only allow one to enter is because the sea dragons are literally just dragons that swim. And if you think about the typical dragon, we're talking battleship-type armor.
Yeah, they are basically like fantasy warships.
Yeah, they are basically fantasy warships with the ability of an aircraft carrier. It's basically the SHIELD helicarrier all rolled into one and more maneuverable.
And also, I assume, breathes fire.
Yes. So that's basically your typical dragon. Sea dragons are the same, except they swim. And Imal has this idea. What if we broke the dragon gate and let a bunch of dragons in instead of just one? Everybody would have to come to us to basically ask for our help. We cement our hold on the Empire. Everything goes my way. I stay in charge. Great idea.
Yes, I see no potential downsides with that.
Yeah. One problem with this idea. The mechanism that controls the dragon gate is housed within a massive citadel. There's guards everywhere. They don't answer to the Stormlords. They basically, their duty is to protect the Dragon Gate. That's what they're loyal to, their duty. And there's loads of guards on because the Dragon Day is coming up. Yada, yada, yada. Somebody has to sneak in, destroy the gate mechanism or sabotage it enough so that multiple dragons can come in. Switch over to Chameleon. The Chameleons have been hired to do a certain job. That job is to sabotage the Dragon Gate. But they weren't hired by the Stormlords.
But who were they hired by?
Somebody else has got involved. Now, the Chameleon Priests are assassins, spies, thieves, that sort of thing.
Because the Chameleon is god of sneaky, sneaky stuff.
Yes. The leader of the Chameleon Priests is Caval Flood, and he has a sister, Carmel Flood. He has issues which come out at the end of the book. They're kind of hinted at throughout the book, but they come out at the end of the book. And he gets his sister to go along and basically sneak into the Citadel to try and sabotage the Dragon Gate. Problem is, since you have two sides, one of them is working for the Stormlords, the other one isn't. It's working for a third party. And then you have a different party getting involved and everything starts, the schnonsense literally starts hitting the fan in like big, big clumps. The schnonsense really, really starts hitting the fan. And ends up with a pitched battle between Stormlords and various others who are supposed to be their friends but aren't their friends but are their friends but they tried to kill them and now they're trying to kill each other in the underwater throne room that the Stormlords use when they're watching the Dragon Day Festival.
Which is awesome that they have an underwater throne room.
Yeah. Meanwhile, while this is going on, Seren Sol is on land fighting against Caval, who's basically sided with Imal, the Stormlord, who wants to stay in charge, while Caval's sister, Carmel, is basically trying to fight for her life, and various battles have gone on, things have happened. Millie and Tally, who are the bodyguards, who are the twin bodyguards of Imal, they are fighting and fighting, everybody's fighting each other, and then a dragon turns up and goes, yep, you can all fight me now. So Seren basically does what a guardian does and attacks.
Which I'm sure turns out fantastically.
Oh, no, it doesn't. Things get very, 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 very strange. The fight is... The great thing about this book is that the action sequences are very detailed, but they're also kind of protracted in certain ways. You don't necessarily have to explain every single step of the fight. For example, and it can get a bit dizzying. Yes, it is a written piece, but if this was a visual piece, the camera would be flicking between different people fighting different enemies, and you wouldn't be able to stay focused on one. And because it's a book, it can jump around like that, but if it was a visual medium, you'd have to stick with one, then move on to the next one, move on to the next one, so you could see how everything progressed. With this, it can get a little bit convoluted because you might be reading about Seren Sol fighting the dragon, but then it switches over to the fight in the throne room, and all you've got is this little line of symbols that separates the two.
Yeah.
And that can get a little bit convoluted. I'm not going to say how this ends, but Mazana Creed does play a big part in this book, a huge, huge part in this book. It does make me want to read the third book. I'm really looking forward to it. It's very, very well written. Again, like When the Heavens Fall, it's superbly informative in quite a lot of ways. The plot is very, very complex. But unlike When the Heavens Fall, this is a lot more direct. When the Heavens Fall had different angles and different characters and loads of different viewpoints, whereas this is mainly told from the perspective of Seren Sol. So it's more individual, and it gives you a nice little difference in perspective between the two books, the first book and the second book. And this does overlap in the timeline a little with the events of the first book. The great thing about this and When the Heavens Fall, what mainly connects them is the information about the world, the history, the mythology, the events that are going on at that particular time. That's the thing that connects the two books more than anything else. It does name drop a little bit to characters from the first book. And you do have the spider turning up from time to time. And the chameleon is also referenced in When the Heavens Fall, but it doesn't really go into detail about the chameleons that much. You find out more about them here. The stone skins who are suddenly reappearing because somebody's used the book to call them back. We think that's what's going on, but it's not confirmed. And I think that's the great thing about it. It keeps certain details, keeps you guessing, doesn't automatically say, this is what's going on here. So just deal with it.
Yeah, it's something that's, you're going to have to work out over the course of the story.
But that's what keeps you interested in the story, because you want to know what the hell are these things? Why is he fighting them? You know, why are they fighting? Why are they getting involved? Where have they come from? What are they? And I've just realized I'm really...
Yeah, you're getting rather handsy with your descriptions.
Yeah, I know. It's a weird thing. But good thing about Dragon Hunters, aside from the fact that it has freaking dragons, nothing says fantasy like dragons.
Dragons make everything better.
Yes. So say it with dragons, this Valentine's Day.
It should be better with dragons.
What?
One Direction fan fiction.
No, because if that BBC article is correct. Let's leave that to one side. Oh, Dragon Hunters by Mark Turner. This Chronicles of the Exile, it's very, very recommended. It's kind of a throwback a little bit. When Robert Jordan first started writing the Wheel of Time series back in the 90s, he came up with this idea of this fantasy on a massive scale, a scale that nobody had really done. Not even Tolkien had done it. Nobody had really done this huge series of books where everything was just telling one story. You know, you had multiple protagonists, you had so many different events, you had betrayals and plots and counterplots with the plans and the pots and the pans and everything like that. This is a throwback to that kind of fantasy novel. It's very, very detailed. There's multiple protagonists. There's multiple plot threads, and everything has a reaction. Everything has a consequence. And that might not seem obvious at the time, but it does come back later on. And I like that kind of fantasy. In fact, I love that kind of fantasy. That's the kind of fantasy that gets me out of bed in the morning. Seriously, it's that kind of book. Any kind of book where I can basically just, I could literally bite into it, tear a chunk off, chew it for the next 6 months, and go, that's some good fantasy. And this is that type of book. I mean, look at it.
Hey, so, in summary, Dragon's Hunters is a tasty fantasy sandwich.
Yes, along with When the Heavens Fall. I didn't like the cover of When the Heavens Fall, and I think the name is a little bit...
pretentious.
Yeah, it's a little bit pretentious, but it does make sense when you read the book. It's just, you know, for my taste, the name is a bit... But Dragon Hunters is a nice, straightforward name. It does exactly what it says on the tin. And I like titles that do exactly what they say on the tin. And I like books that are big and complex and that don't really do the whole sappy One Direction fanfic emotion type thing. They just get straight to it. They dive straight in and go, yay, here you go. Here's a sword. That's a dragon. Go fight the dragon. If you win, we'll write a book about you.
Yeah, good stuff.
So, yeah, highly recommended. Anyway, I think we're at the end of the show.
That's it. It's all over. We're done.
Okay, so if you want to get in touch with us, you can do so studio@thegeekshow.co.uk. The Geek Show Podcast Network is a voluntary organization, so if you want to show your support, you can do so by pressing the donate button on the right-hand side of our website, thegeekshow.co.uk, or by heading to the Geek Shop, which you can also find on the website, and purchasing one of our lovely pieces of merchandise. Now, next week, we will have more bookage. But until then, I have been Rob.
And I've just been a gigantic pile of fluey mucus.
Yes, who managed to extricate some of that while we were talking about the Diagram Prize.
Yes, I did. So, tactical nose blowing.
Yes, tactical nose blowing. We'll see you all next week.
Thanks for listening.